Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, we're in the middle of August. It means we're in the middle of training camp. It's all coming down, isn't it?
We are just a couple weeks away from the start of Penn State football. That is crazy, given how long it felt like the offseason was and also how short it felt like it was in terms of, you know, summer vacation. Camps are starting up all over America for football and other sports and things like that. Where, like, it's funny. I think summer goes all the way into September, but fall absolutely starts in August.
That is it. And I like the way you said it seems so long and still so short at the same time. Early in the off season, it seems like forever till we'll get to football season. Now that it's upon us, you go, oh my goodness, where did summer go? It's already gone. But we have it's coming, T. Frank, and we still have, because this is a forever recruiting season, goes year round. Happens yeah. forever. And and we joked about it a little bit last week, but for a while now, I've been critical of this year's class, okay? And I've been critical of the lack of Pennsylvania recruits at the top. Yep, I know there could be some different services, say who's in the top 10, who's not, and so on. But a little bit, it looks like Penn State is attempting to prove me wrong here, T. Frank. They've got a couple of recruits. One of them, it's a Pennsylvania kid, top 10 recruit, and they converted him from a Duke commit. And I'm talking about Cameron Smith. He's the linebacker from St. Joe's in Philadelphia, which is another point of emphasis probably here for recruiting. He had committed to Duke. He reconsidered his commitment. He's now a Nittany Lion, T. Frank.
Yep, that is the timeline for sure. Good football player, and I think in this particular conversation, he is a pure linebacker. And we have to designate that because Penn State has picked up a lot of interesting body types that can kind of float between linebacker or defensive end. When you talk about LeVar Arrington and Deshaun Burnett, I think this allows them to maybe make some harder designations from that group. Deshaun Burnett has always leaned more towards an edge rusher to me. And I think that you can kind of, with Cam Smith and Alex Tash in the class, now you have two pure linebackers to kind of round this out and make this a little bit cleaner of an evaluation from the overall standpoint. So I think Cam Smith, not only is he a good football player, a traditional Penn State linebacker in terms of his skill set, but he also provides some definition to a very amorphous defensive class. So a big pickup for Penn State on a couple of different levels.
And it's also the fact that he's out of St. Joe's, arguably the best high school football program in the state of Pennsylvania. How important is that, T. Frank? Where I'm getting at is it seems like Penn State or all schools, they have certain pipelines to certain high schools. How important is it for Penn State to kind of break into St. Joe's?
I mean, it's a tough question because it's not just St. Joe's. It's Imhotep. It's all the schools down there in the Philadelphia region that Penn State has generally struggled with more than the western side of the state. And we've talked about this on the BWI Live show that Terry Smith has Pittsburgh on lockdown. Pretty much any player that they want out of that area, they've been able to get. Philadelphia has been a harder nut to crack for a couple of different reasons, but I would say that general corridor, Philadelphia is not more important than the Catholic leagues, say in Maryland. You know, you got your good councils, your DeMathas, your McDonoughs, that particular general area down the Eastern Seaboard. There's some schools that are super important in that area that Penn State has done well with in the past, but they haven't been able to be consistent with over time. So, yeah, I think Philadelphia is important, but Whenever you ask a recruiting question about how important is one area, I could also say like their national recruiting and getting guys from California or from Texas, from the South. Florida has been big for this school. So it's just there's you can't overemphasize one particular area because there's so many different places they have to go to get talent. And generally, I'd also say like some of those schools around the Philadelphia area aren't even the ones directly in Philly, you know, like the regional Philly area going out to the Westchester part of town, I'd say is maybe more important. There's been guys that I think consistently have higher potential out of that area, but you know, it's however you can get the talent from that side of the state. And that has been Penn State's issue over the years.
And I believe, just as an aside, I think Cameron Smith is actually a New Jersey native.
He is, yeah.
And for those who don't know that geography there, South Jersey is a suburb of Philadelphia.
New Jersey is a suburb of New York and Philadelphia, right? Like, it's not its own state. Like, Connecticut is a suburb of Boston and New York City. So, like, we all have our parts to play, right?
That's right. North Jersey is a suburb of New York, South Jersey, suburb of Philadelphia. And if you're that in-between area of Jersey, who cares? There's nothing there anyway. it's also interesting with Cameron Smith. You get the impression from the interviews with him that he wanted to be a Penn Stater, but the inn was full. Penn State had its quota of linebackers, and he was on the outside looking in until there was the decommit from Penn State to Rutgers, I believe it was, which created an opening for Cameron Smith. Is that how this one played out?
Yes, pretty much. So there's no limit on any particular, and because you answered the question already, like I don't want to just rehash that, but there are certain players where there is no limit, right? So if Ty Jackson wanted to commit to this class, he's the number one linebacker in America. There's enough room for another linebacker. The question is, if you've got guys of similar skill sets or similar styles, is that plus one designation, do you fit that category over, you know, we want to have X number of linebackers in this class? So to that point, yes, if he had been at a certain level, they would have taken him no matter what. But they weren't sure at the time. Tom Allen had just come over from Indiana or from being fired from Indiana. And, of course, Manny Diaz was the previous defense coordinator that Cam Smith was familiar with and knew. And that transition, along with kind of the way the recruiting calendar plays out, didn't work in Penn State's favor, where they got more commits than they expected. So they had to try and slow play some of this. And then, of course, he doesn't wait and commits to Duke. So you're right. There was always that desire to be a part of the class. But then you have to go through the process of, I'm not saying there's not a rebuilding phase, because Penn State never really lost contact with him, according to our experts at Blue White Illustrated. It was more along the lines of just like the timing had to work out on that end. And it did for Penn State here in August, where they were able to get him up on campus again, re-engage with him on a more serious level. And then, you know, I think this commitment to me fits a lot better with Cam Smith than it did maybe with DJ McClary and his fit and his positional skills within the class.
And I think just as a last note on Cameron Smith is, if someone might question, well, why did he commit to Duke? Well, it doesn't hurt to commit to a school. You could always switch up. And the fact that, as you said, Penn State was staying in communication with them, you can't blame a kid for getting something under his belt. Like, okay,
yeah. Find a home, right? And if you feel like your number one location that you wanted to go, that's not an option anymore, then you're going to find something that's similar. And I don't think you can get more similar than Manny Diaz at Duke. Literally, it's almost the same scheme. It's almost the same. The only other place you could have gone was Virginia Tech with Brent Pry. You know, like or maybe Old Dominion. I don't know about where he, but like those are the schools that are going to be on his list. And if he feels like he had a good relationship with Gabe Infante and with Manny Diaz at Duke, yeah, it makes sense. And Duke has a history of producing good players that go to the NFL. A couple guys from the defensive line over the years. So it's not like it's a place that has no talent at all. And if you believe in Diaz, that's somebody you would follow. So yeah, if you want to find a home, I don't blame kids for making decisions instead of just waiting around like you're waiting to be asked to the prom. You know, like, just go to the prom, find somebody and go, and then have a good time.
Well, and also, by the way, that Duke school, not a bad academic school either, T. Frank.
Right.
The other recent commit, got another wide receiver, Kobe Howard, a 5'11", 185-pound wide receiver out of Florida, as you mentioned, where they still do some pretty good recruiting.
He's an interesting player that I think a lot of people will debate because he's good. A receiver that has to prove their athleticism to the school is never going to be a receiver that people love, if that makes a lot of sense. Because at certain positions, we like high-end athletes, and Penn State has a lot of good at receiver. What they need are difference-making guys. Now, you may think that Lyric Samuel's a difference-making guy, so they've got one of those in this class, but you'd love to have another bite of the apple when it comes to that particular position. So, Kobe Howard, really good receiver and a good enough athlete to play at Penn State. The conversation around him was just finding that information out, and he came up to the Lash Bash, and it all worked out for him.
How would you describe him? Is he the quick receiver? Is he fast, shifty? What are we getting with Kobe Howard?
So when I think of a guy like Kobe Howard, the player that always comes to mind for me for some reason is Robert Woods. And I don't know if that's a fair comparison, but let me just describe Robert Woods in my mind. A guy who's really good at the position, had enough skill set to play in the NFL, but his ceiling was a number two. His ceiling was a guy that was going to get you catches, and maybe every once in a while he could take over a game, but not the athlete that can dominate. Kobe Howard, great positionally, good athlete, good after the catch, has some strong receiver tendencies, hands, vertical, things like that, but nothing that stands out as a definable trait. So you've got the guys in this class, Jeff Exon, are big, physical, moves well, but those are his, you know, his main things. Lyric Samuel, tall, long, deep threat receiver. Kobe Howard, good at football. And so, like, you know, there's if you're not a guy who has 4.3 speed or something like that that they wanted to add to this class to kind of give them a profile of a more explosive unit, then getting a guy who's good at football with a high floor, I think, is what they went with here with Kobe Howard as their number three.
All right, very good. Well, it's nice to get an addition to the wide receiver room. We all know that's been a position they've struggled with now for the last several years. Hopefully we've got a couple stars in there somewhere, T. Frank. That's it for quarter number one. Quarter two, we're going to do some Tony Rojas conversation. Stay tuned for that.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is T. Frank Carr. We're talking Penn State. We're talking some Penn State recruiting, a couple new recruits for the class of 2025. Cameron Smith, a linebacker from St. Joe's down in Philadelphia area. He changed his commitment from Duke to Penn State. Also added Kobe Howard, a wide receiver from Florida. And T. Frank, just one last note, put a kind of a bow on our recruiting conversation. I've been at least semi-critical of the 2015 recruiting class, and I always hesitate with that because it gets translated into me being critical of the individual players. I am not. As our old colleague Ross Tucker used to say, hey, if you're good enough to be offered a scholarship to play Penn State football, you're a pretty good player, okay? Just at that point. But my issue is, and in your conversations with Cameron about Cameron Smith and Kobe Howard, it seems to confirm this. We're not seeing any of that high-end talent in this 2025 class. We're not seeing those consensus four-star guys, the consensus top 100 players. That is my issue with the class of 2025. A lot of good players. I'm not sure how many great players there are in it. Is that a fair assessment?
So Kobe Howard does not solve your problem at wide receiver that we discussed, you know, talking about needing difference makers, and everyone always compares it to the Ohio State wide receiver room, which at a certain point is patently ridiculous of their over the last 7 years, maybe 5 years. I don't know exactly the timeline. There's been exactly one comparable room, and that's at Alabama. You know, LSU has in the conversation there of guys over time being elite, but not the concentrated, dense first-round draft pick backing up first-round draft pick talent every single year at Ohio State and Alabama. That's it. That's the list. So Penn State is obviously not on that list. But are you inching closer? Are you finding guys that can elevate from a four-star to five-star in terms of their production, their talent, their skill? Kobe Howard doesn't necessarily present that to you from an athletic perspective. So that is, I think, a fair assessment. I would say that given the overall assessment of that class, that is not a fast wide receiver group. Now, if you 2026, different story. That is a burner of a unit. Those guys are super fast, incredibly athletic. This is a bigger, more physical receiver room from the class of 2025. Now, Cam Smith is a very good athlete, so I will disagree with you there. He does not have the overall ranking perspective because he's not 6'2 or 6'3 as a linebacker. Alex Tash is that guy from a height, weight, speed, build perspective of kind of a classic modern box linebacker. Cam Smith is more of that field guy. He's kind of a Sam. He's excellent in coverage. I love watching him play football, and he's got really good run instincts. He's a patient, but not deliberate closer in the run game. So he breaks down and does, and he has really good tackling technique, but he does it in a way where he's still explosive. So he's a really good athlete. The only question about him, from a rankings perspective, is just that height and size and total frame. But I think some of the metrics we see from Penn State's, you know, what they like in players, he's got long arms, he's got big hands, he's got a frame to grow into. So Cam Smith is one of those guys that can change the topography of a class by being underrated and having better skills than I think you would say from a four-star who's got he's a consensus four-star, or he is a four-star, but not a consensus four-star. So a little bit of both with these last two recruits. And that's why I think it's an interesting class, to your point, that the obvious high-end athletes that have all of the tech, all of the traits, yeah, they haven't gotten any of those guys with these particular players, but some of the metrics there, I think Penn State's still doing okay with.
All right, let's shift gears. Let's go from future Nittany Lions to a current Nittany Lion. Recently, speaking of our colleagues, you did a video with our good friend Landon Tengwall talking about Tony Rojas. He can be the next really special linebacker at LBU.
Yeah, he's the next Stick City, I think. I mean, I have a hard time. So it's funny, Jim, a lot of times because I try to have a nuanced conversation about some of these prospects like Kobe Howard or even Lyric Samuel, there's some things on his film that are like concerning to me from what I saw from the individual play perspective. But then you have players like Tony Rojas that I can't stop gushing about or getting overly excited about, where I think he's got All-American potential at Penn State eventually. And just the what I saw from him dominating in cleanup time, he's mastered or seems to have a strong understanding of the fundamentals of football well beyond not only a freshman, but a freshman who did not play his position in high school, who's learning some of these techniques and positional skills for the first time during his freshman season. And now that he's stepping into the Will linebacker role as the team starter, I think he has the potential to be a superstar this year, to eclipse what we saw from Abdul Carter in his second year and be one of the best all-around linebackers under James Franklin during his 11 years at Penn State. That's what Rojas can eventually be. I think he could be the best of those linebackers from a talent perspective, but, you know, there's just always that good and garbage time versus the full-on playbook for each team. We'll see how deep those instincts that we highlighted go.
Well, that leads to my question. You said about good and garbage time. He did not get a lot of snaps last year. He did get some, but it seemed like every time he was in the game, T. Frank, he made his presence felt.
Yeah.
And, you know, a disproportionate number of times it was like, okay, here's Tony Rojas with the tackle, forced fumble, whatever it was. So the question becomes, just how much can we take away from that?
So the way I've tried to frame it is, and like I said before, to me, it seems like instincts are there for playing and not overthinking, in the understanding that during his time on the field, the defense was running base concepts, meaning they're not running the full playbook, and the offense is also running a simplified version of their playbook because the game's over. Like, they're not trying in the same way that they were trying in the first quarter. So he's mastered, to me, at this point, I would expect through progression, he's mastered the fundamentals of the game. And that's the part where I think we did not see that from some of the other great linebackers, is they did not necessarily have a mastering of the coverage instincts the way that Tony Rojas seemed to take to it like a fish to water. Even the way he moved in space, I was unprepared for in training camp last year, where he's flipping his hips, he's running, he's getting his eyes in the right position, like doing drills for ball disruption in coverage. He looked like he had been doing it his whole life. And he was a D end in high school who almost never dropped and certainly never played in space more than a couple of games against a team that wanted to run the football. Like, he was moved to linebacker because they had to get more big bodies on the field at Fairfax. So he's a guy who never really played in coverage. And then suddenly his freshman season was showing really good understanding of coverage principles. So that's where, you know, you take that from his time on the field, but then you have to, again, extrapolate it to he came in for Abdul Carter in the bowl game and Ole Miss ran some play action around the goal line, and suddenly all of that coverage instinct went away when he gave up a touchdown. So, yeah, there is a bridge to gap. There is a gap that needs a bridge from last year's impressive time as a cleanup player into what we see from him going forward. But I put him in the same bucket as a denied Dennis Sutton, who also dominated in that area. And then his next season was a really strong contributor and a part-time starter for Penn State when Chop Robinson went down. So there are comparisons, I think, there of how you play in those garbage time situations that project well to the future.
And I like that you pointed out that there's a skill set there for Tony Rojas. You talked about the coverage skills. I'm not going to overreact to one play in a bowl game. All pro players will make a mistake on a specific play. That happens. But overall, this is a guy who has tremendous coverage skills. But it also seems you pointed out, he was making plays, a lot of plays in the running game also.
So I'll give you this stat, which, the film study is up on Landon's YouTube page, and it's also at bluewhiteillustrated.com. You can sign up now, subscribe, and go read that. The stat that I found interesting is, on run plays, he had a stop rate, according to PFF, of 20%. Again, it's skewed by small sample size, but watching his instincts in the run game and understanding what the offense is doing to then understand Tony's reaction to it, he reacted incredibly well. And he reads the run very well. He's physical. He's got the balance and contact strength and athleticism to get skinny through the hole and still be ready to make tackles. So this is a guy who has, three-dimensional potential. Elite run stuffer. Former DN that can pass rush and can attack running backs or tight ends, and a guy who can be great in coverage. And Penn State has not had a guy with a complete skill set like that at linebacker during this incredible run of great linebackers, where you would say that guy has one or two softer areas in his game. Tony has the potential to be all three. And again, potential. But I feel more confident about him reaching those elements than I did even a guy like Micah Parsons, who was getting the coverage aspect, and there were certain differences in Brent Pry's defense that I think made it a little bit unfair of a comparison, but he never reached the level of like devastating coverage player that you couldn't throw at.
What position, what linebacker position will Tony Rojas be playing?
He'll be the Will, which isn't a surprise. We thought he was going to come in and play Sam last year, which is the outside the field position, because he's a 4.4 athlete. He's super fast for 235, but he was so good during the spring where they played him there that they were cross-training him to back up Abdul Carter at that Will position to kind of... this is the whole thing. It's like Tony's been ahead the whole time. He came in at 195. He was 225 by the time the season rolled around. He was playing Sam, and suddenly after the spring, he's playing Will in camp this time last year. He's been ahead of the curve this whole time. So he'll be the Will. And unless they're playing a run heavy team that makes Penn State want to put Abdul Carter at linebacker, that's where he's going to stay. He might play in the field a little bit, but he's going to be that complete guy on the backside who blitzes, plays the run, plays in the box, is around the ball all the time.
Well, the fact that it's going to be primarily a 4-2 defense with just two linebackers, that does that change his responsibilities at all?
No, it doesn't change anything for any of the players necessarily. The Lion, I think, as I said, the only difference is in this particular defense, Manny Diaz versus Brent Pry, that third linebacker spot, that 11th defender, does more in this defense than it did in Manny Diaz's defense.
All right, T. Frank, that is it for quarter number two. Coming up next, quarter three, we've got your questions for T. Frank. Stay tuned for that.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He is T. Frank. I'm Jim. Quarter three, you know what that means. It's time to ask T. Frank. This is where we take your questions for T. Frank. If you want to send your question in, just download our app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask T. Frank button, and away you go. T. Frank, are you ready, sir?
If I'm not, I better get ready in the next 30 seconds. So, yeah, let's say for purposes, I'm ready to go. I don't know. I wanted a new way to answer other than yes, which would have been the more efficient thing to get to more questions.
I was just looking for a yes. That's all I wanted, T. Frank. Just give me the simple yes and let's get going. All right, let's start with Frank in Mechanicsburg. I like this question, T. Frank. He says, T. Frank, in all your film study, is there a coach out there that you particularly admire for his creativity and innovation?
If you've listened to this show for a while, Tom Allen is one of my favorite defensive coordinators for his creativity and innovation on the defensive side of the football. So I think, you know, I didn't think Tom Allen was a realistic target for Penn State initially for a couple of different reasons. I think that maybe they wanted to go in a different direction initially, but when just the way the hiring process went, Tom Allen was more interested than I expected. I just didn't know if, you know, a guy who had been a head coach for 8 years, if he wanted to be a defense coordinator again. Penn State was very lucky that he didn't want to deal with NIL or any of the other CEO responsibilities as a head coach. But his defense is fun to watch. It's challenging and interesting without being gimmicky or stupid in my mind. Because like there are teams that try to do too much or try to get too cute. And you might say some of the stuff Tom Allen does is bordering on too cute, but I think it's done with intentionality and with a purpose that is challenging. Like, you know, Penn State has been challenged by Tom Allen's defenses over the years, even with overwhelming talent. Indiana always made him work for it. So I like Tom Allen's defense from that perspective of just how innovative it has been. We'll see what version of that shows up at Penn State with more talent, so maybe he doesn't have to take as many risks. And you know, bluntly, Manny Diaz. But let me rephrase that. Manny Diaz's defense before he got to Penn State with the talent he had was not the same defense. So you could see what he was trying to do, and I went, yeah, okay, there's some problems here if you don't get home with all that pressure, but he did. And, you know, I think the way he was able to craft and evolve that defense was incredibly impressive. And then from the level of hearing some feedback from players that absolutely loved that guy, he's somebody that I was really impressed with. Offensively, that's interesting. I think Lincoln Riley, like guys who have a system that makes sense and is not paint-by-numbers, kind of bland, modern offense. I've really been impressed with Andy Kolnicki as I've gotten to know him, but I can't say that I knew him before Penn State, so I don't want to just go with recency bias. Steve Sarkisian, I think his offensive system is fun for quarterbacks. It's explosive. His usage of RPO is kind of game-breaking with the amount of speed at receiver he can recruit. So that's a big one. And I'll leave it there. I think Steve Sarkisian. Lincoln Riley, there's a lot of fame there. But overall, I think it's kind of a simple scheme that he's done effectively. And there's a couple wrinkles that are interesting. But watching him this offseason, it was not as innovative and magical as I expected once I started digging and learning some of the principles. So I guess that'd be my list of coaches that I've run across that off the top of my head I'm really impressed with. In college, anyway.
A couple of responses to that. It also helps to have some of the quarterback talent that he had. You made a comment about Manny Diaz that I thought was really insightful and important when evaluating coaches. You said he was a different coach once he had the talent that he had at Penn State. I think that's a tremendous compliment for coaches who could change to accommodate the talent they have in their room, because it's always changing.
I don't know that he changed anything. It just, his scheme worked when he had better players. Like, he got pass rush, and so he could protect the secondary with some of the aggressive things that he's able to do. And I think he learned when to back off, you know, coming to the Big Ten and understanding that you can't put four DNs and a 250-pound nose tackle out there and then expect teams not to run at it on third and seven. And so he adjusted, and they found different ways to challenge the offense that were vastly different than when he started at Penn State, but still kept to the same core ideas and principles of attacking, pressure, the illusion of pressure, and all of those things.
Also, one last note. You talked about being able to get Tom Allen in here from a head coaching position. It's interesting because obviously James Franklin did the same thing with Manny Diaz. We're seeing a little bit. We saw Chip Kelly make the move because he just didn't want to deal with the head coaching stuff.
Yep.
But coordinator at a big time school is not a bad spot for a former head coach to help them then rehabilitate themselves to get a head coaching job next time around. We saw that plenty at Alabama.
I'm not so certain that Tom Allen isn't a long-term stay here. Just talking to him and kind of seeing what he's about, I could see him being now he's been a head coach, it would take a very special situation, I think, for him to want to leave Penn State, because there's certain guys, Steve Spagnuolo in the NFL with the Kansas City Chiefs, who is a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator, got kind of a rough job with the Rams in St. Louis as a head coach after he would help win a Super Bowl with the New York Giants. Having a guy that wants to be the best defensive coordinator in his generation, that can be super helpful. And I don't know that Tom Allen is the best defensive coordinator of this generation in football. That's not what I'm saying. But a guy who has those credentials and has been very good at crafting defense that isn't looking for the next step. You know, Manny Diaz obviously came here wanting to be a head coach. I think Tom Allen is a different, there's a potential for Tom Allen to be here a long time.
And either way is fine if you've got someone that talented, but it's not a bad gig, okay? A coordinator position with a major school, Penn State gets a lot of defensive talent year after year. Not a bad position. All right, let's move on. Let's go to Brad in Perkasie. who says, I agree Julian Fleming is no longer a five-star, but he was an Ohio State starter, which is the best wide receiver room in the country. How is he maybe not a starter at Penn State? Please explain.
Well, he has similar skill set to Trey Wallace, who is the number one receiver in this offense. He fits that position from a general starting point. Andy Cole and Nicky said this, and I want to ask him about this. Hopefully we get to talk to him this week. He mentioned during his press conference that they're focusing the offensive line on mastering one thing, but also giving them kind of a minor in something else from a positional standpoint. So one guy's mastering left guard, but he's going to be getting some cross training at other positions. Receiver, I see in the same way of you got to have a home base as a position, but you can play a bunch of different positions within the offensive structure at wide receiver, whether it's the H, whether it's the Z or the X. But to me, he's a really good Z receiver, which is the guy who runs routes, gets open, beats zone coverage consistently underneath the defense or in between zones. He showed a lot of professionalism. He knows how to run routes. He knows how to create separation with technique. And then he's healthy and has improved his athleticism, according to Penn State, Chuck Losey, James Franklin, all those guys. So he can be a highly valuable rotational player who is, you know, the fourth receiver in an offense that rotates through four receivers. Who starts is not necessarily as important as how many snaps you get in the season. And he could see the second or third most snaps, but not ever be a starter from a long-term perspective. So receiver, there's always that opportunity within the offense. The other thing is, like, they're going to move Trey Wallace around. So when they move Trey Wallace, who comes in to replace him? That would be Julian Fleming. So to me, that's how you get him on the field. He's not a starter, but he is a guy that plays starter level importance in packages and in reps.
And I think of number of reps is a lot more important than who's starting, who's there on the first snap from scrimmage. All right, let's go to Carl in Phoenixville, who says, how can Penn State best exploit using their running backs as receivers?
So they're going to do it. It's pretty clear in Andy Kotelnicki's offense that running backs are going to be a large part of this offense. And we've talked about this. Again, I've written about this ad nauseum at BlueWayIllustrated.com and shown you in my film breakdowns how he did it at Kansas. A lot of motions, a lot of two-back sets, but not having them line up in the backfield, putting them in the slot, even putting them in offensively odd formations, like lining them up at tight end, you know, in that H-back position. But to me, the main thing is have them run routes downfield. Have them attack weaknesses in the defense from the backfield based on concepts you already run. So having a guy run a wheel route instead of just a flat route where he's going 10 yards down the field instead of just negative 5 yards where he's a check down. Intentionality with how you attack the defense with the running back is really the point. And then using them. And I think it's interesting that Andy Kotelnicki, when asked about Nick Singleton and Catron Allen, started the conversation with Cam Wallace and Quentin Martin. To me, that says absolutely we're going to have two back sets because we need four. If one of those guys gets nicked up, we need to have the ability to put in fresh bodies and still maintain this as a core part of our playbook. So they will, and I think that's the main thing, is getting those guys downfield attacking different parts of defense intentionally instead of just using them as screens and checkdowns.
I liked that you mentioned wheel route. I can't help but think of Saquon Barkley.
Right. Yeah.
Let's quickly get to Tom in Erie, who says, how does the talent on this year's team compare to prior years? Is this the best Franklin team talent-wise?
No, just because I don't know. Okay.
How about can it be?
Sure. Yeah, this could be the most talented team under James Franklin ever if Drew Aller figures out, becomes the height of his potential. That's always been the point of Drew Aller. I think losing Olu, Fashanu, and Caden Wallace, it's hard to say this is the most talented team when you had a top five pick at left tackle and one of the most important positions. Receiver didn't change, maybe got a little worse talent-wise. I think the defense is as deep. So, no, I wouldn't say it is the most talented under James Franklin. There's some really talented teams that were top-heavy with the way they executed, but this could be the deepest team for sure.
All right, T. Frank, that's it for quarter three. We got more to go. Stick with us.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. And T. Frank, this has become now our tradition, and I feel like I got to keep it going. We can't let quarter three just die as is when it's done. Got to add an extra comment in. And in talking about this being the most talented team or not, most talent doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the most successful.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was having a hard time determining because there's a couple different things, right? So there's high-end talent. 2016, I think, was the most top-heavy team in terms of superstar talent, where you had across the offensive board guys that became incredible players, not only here but in the NFL. And then you've got depth, which I think this could be the deepest and most resilient team. And then you've got the most successful, which you would say that Big Ten championship team in 2016. So I think that there's different ways you can measure it. And I don't have a good answer because my brain doesn't really like going three directions at once in that kind of thought process.
Well, I'll give my quick thought on it. I think I understand why Tom asked the question and asked it the way he did, because there is the potential for that very high-end talent. When you look at running back, Ohio State is considered to have the best running back room in the country. I understand why. But Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. You got a quarterback with the potential, there's that word again, to be among the best. You've got a really good star tight end, and you've got star power all over the defense, some really elite players there. So yeah. I understand kind of like with that just surface look, like when you see someone review a team that's reviewing, you know, here's the top 20 teams in the country, and they give highlights.
Yeah.
You could see how they would give the highlights of this team and say, oh, it has the potential to be really good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the most resilient team and the deepest team, and I'll go to the counterpoint to the one I made about not having Olufashinu. You got four tackles, and something that we talked about a little bit earlier and we're going to get into here in a second is the way they've talked about left tackle recently. Javon Williams has taken a big step forward. So you have four players that you feel really good about at tackle. I don't know a time in history that I've been paying attention to Penn State where they've had four guys that have the talent to be good starters, let alone some of these guys have great potential. And I think that's a rarity for them to have options at that particular position, even if they don't have defined starters. Because every year you're going to have questions on your team, no matter what level of football. That's the nature of how everything churns with free agency or with college or even, you know, just in high school with the talent you have in your region at that time. So I do think that there is a certain amount of high-end potential here that it could be. But this is not a team that you say going in like, this is their year to challenge for the Big Ten championship. I felt like there have been years previous where that was more the reality, given the veteran experience and the high end of what we already knew was coming back.
Exactly. Okay, you kind of previewed where we're headed for this quarter number four, T. Frank, in talking about the offensive line, and that's where I want to ask you some questions about it. Let's start mm-hmm. with what's probably considered the position battle, which is at right tackle. I'm thinking it's Anthony Donka versus Nolan Rucci, right?
That would, yes. And then the degree of competition is really the thing in question. Because both guys come in with, I think it's fair to say, question marks, even if they're not like serious. How do I phrase this? Everyone is super high on Anthony Donko and what he can be at that right tackle position. Going back to our conversation, if he could be as good as some of the best linemen we've seen play tackle at Penn State under James Franklin, but he's a redshirt freshman. And so like as long as that's there until week five, where we have a good database of information about what he is halfway through his second year, there's no saying he's gonna be elite, lock that in. And then you've got a guy like Nolan Rucci who has blossomed at Penn State and I think has taken some steps physically that have unlocked all of that potential he's always had, which has been the issue for him, is just he's been a little bit undersized for being 6'8", hasn't had the power to dominate the way we've seen him do previously. So those guys, what is the level of competition at that right tackle battle, I think is the biggest question. And what Penn State is learning about right now on the practice field against the defense.
I hadn't really thought about it until you just answered the question, T. Frank, but these guys are kind of the opposites here.
Yes.
You have the veteran experience, been around forever, the young guy, inexperienced. You have the Donka, though, you can't question his size, but that's what you had as your question mark for Nolan Rucci. So you've got two very different players vying for that position.
But also similar in the sense that neither are proven. Rucci only played, like the most snaps he played was his last game at Wisconsin in the bowl game. So that's a big unknown in terms of his actual potential against the best of the best in the Big Ten. So you do come in with similarities but differences, and the side... Size is always an interesting thing to say, because you would never say with Nolan Rucci's length and his height that he lacks size, but just adding on the good muscle mass in his frame has been his thing. And I think from what we've seen of him as he's progressively gotten bigger while at Penn State, and also what we've heard, is that it's going well. How close is he to the finished product of what he can be? I don't know that right now. But this is why you should be optimistic, is both of these are good options to have at that right tackle battle.
And T. Frank, it leads to the question, Wisconsin's always been known for their development of offensive linemen. And Nolan Rucci, it seemed like he comes to Penn State, seemed like the very obvious thing. They got to put some more good weight on him. How come that didn't happen at Wisconsin? Do they look for different skill sets? They want them longer, leaner?
So first off, the Wisconsin he committed to was not the Wisconsin he left in terms of the coaching staff, because Luke Fickell took over. And yes, Luke Fickell runs a spread offense. I was actually, just for our Sunday film study this past weekend, I was doing Wisconsin versus LSU in the bowl game because it was a film I could find and share with our members at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. So I was going through that game, and this is a spread offense. So they do want guys that are more athletic and longer and more of a pass-centric protector. But so does Penn State. And that's one thing I don't necessarily understand, is he was having a hard time putting weight on at Wisconsin. That's a nutrition thing. So a nutrition and a weightlifting thing at Wisconsin, you wouldn't expect. But at the same time, like, it's not the Wisconsin you're familiar with anymore. It is different because they've changed their direction and their path as a program. So then him coming to Penn State and adding on that weight and becoming that guy from a physical perspective, you know, that's where I think, you know, he left for a lot of different reasons, just from what I saw in film and from what I can kind of glean from the situation. So we'll see where he ends up, because there's also the conversation, maybe he isn't a five-star. Maybe he's something different than that, but he is less proven than a guy like Julian Fleming, who came in with a good level of understanding about what he is after the evaluation process through high school.
Okay, T. Frank, sticking with the offensive line, we had James Franklin talk a bit about J.B. Nelson, who we described as the Swiss Army knife, the guy who could fill in pretty much anywhere, and which is great as part of the depth, that ability to play the multiple positions. But does this also send us the message that Vega Ioane is going to be the starter and J.B. Nelson is going to be the utility player, the guy who could fill in anywhere?
Yeah, I think to a certain degree. I never want to take things too far and say that Vega has locked down the position and he's going to be the left guard kind of in that conversation about where's your home, JB's a left guard. He's going to split reps at left guard with Vega, even if Vega is the guy who is the starter, which has been kind of the way I've viewed him since the spring. Because JB's been injured for so long and Vega has been progressing and getting better, and Vega has a lot of talent. So eventually those things are going to equal out in terms of experience, and maybe you've got a little more athleticism with JB Nelson, which you'd like to get on the field. The thing that was interesting in the conversation about JB is James Franklin talked about right tackle, then he talked about guard, then he finished up with left tackle. Now, up until the summer, JB Nelson was the backup left tackle. So to me, that is reinforcing the conversation about Javon Williams and where he's developed, because I had the conversation, I wrote this during the summers, or we had this conversation, what is optimism and what is the situation dictating that is the reality, where is JB healthy enough to play, and is Javon, are you optimistic about Javon's performance in that situation because he's better than you expected, but he's just what you have right now? That is not the case because JB Nelson is healthy. Now we're talking about him at right tackle, which I don't know if that says anything about the battle and what's going on in camp about those two, but then the ability to fill in at left and right guard and, you know, center, I guess, if they needed him, even though Venga is going to be the backup center, as what we've seen. So it says as much about Javon Williams and his progress and becoming truly an option as the backup left tackle for Penn State. And I think that might be the best information, the best news for Penn State fans that we've seen or heard so far, because this conversation about Drew Shelton is, yes, he's athletic. Yes, he's the guy they've been preparing for this. Is he ready? Because we've seen some really ugly stuff from him. If you've got somebody like Javon Williams, who is a similar player from what he came from in high school as a guy that didn't know how to pass block and has had to learn that, that's really encouraging that he seems to be ahead of that progression where they feel confident about putting him on the field. So again, they have four true tackles, and that's pretty impressive.
And I think that's one of the interesting changes. Do you remember it was just a couple years ago how the issues were at offensive line? The way we talk about wide receiver now is the way we talked about the offensive line.
Yeah.
Now we're talking about all these possibilities, T. Frank.
Yeah, and they've lost guys for stretches of time. You know, I not to bring this up because I, you know, it's land. I don't think people really understand what the loss of Landon Tangwall was to this team in 2023. He was going into the season as the starter opposite of Olufashinu. Then they lost him, and then they lost JB Nelson, and they still had Venga Ioane to play left guard and do a good job. And now we're at a situation where JB Nelson's been in and out, and it's been just kind of like a shoulder shrug because they've got that depth along the offensive line where you're not saying this guy has to play, because that depth and talent has accelerated over the last couple of years. And it's just taken time for those offensive linemen to physically develop into guys that are viable players. And we are here now watching the fruits of Phil Troutwine's labor in that particular room, developing that depth and talent.
I'm glad you brought up Phil Troutwine, because that this development over these couple of years, it's a testament to the recruiting that was done. It's a testament to the development that's gone on also, T. Frank, and that you have to point at the offensive coach, the offensive line coach, Phil Troutwine. So kudos to him. All right, T. Frank, that is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.